And so then the comment about there were reasons that this happened, that doesn't bother you?
No, because I think there were reasons. I mean, maybe one of the reasons is the technician picked the wrong tube off the holder. Maybe the technician read the number wrong. There's gotta be a reason that it happened, but that doesn't mean it's a failure of the practice, like, or a failure of the training. I mean, gosh, if we get into that, like, technicians aren't gonna be able to do anything. And I think in this industry, we're really pushing towards technicians being able to be utilized to their utmost potential. And instead, what I'm hearing is let's pull back and not have technicians do anything because heaven forbid they make a mistake. Like, I just don't see how that helps the profession at all.
I have a very quick comment, if I may, Madam Chair. The thought of not holding a responsible vet responsible for uncertified practitioners in their office causes me great concern. We don't regulate non-certified veterinary technicians. That buck passes to the responsible vet.
Not always. That could fall to the veterinarian who was actually doing the surgery, which we already found accountable. That is not under the responsible veterinarian. The training and policy is under the responsible veterinarian. I totally disagree that this person would be held accountable for that. We already held somebody accountable for that.
Okay, so it's been a lot of discussion now. Yeah. We have a motion and a second to dismiss this case, issue a letter of concern. Let's go ahead and vote on that. So all those in favor of the motion on the floor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Nay. Nay. So, motion fails.
Motion fails.
Yeah, can we just identify who the nays and the...
Two ayes, and then write James and...
Thank you.
Gregor. Okay, so do we have a second motion?
I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second. Okay, a motion and a second to dismiss case 24-112. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
One nay. Motion passes. Thank you everyone for being here. Let's see. I think everybody's here for 24-119. Yes. Okay. So we're going to do item number 17. 24-119 in regards to Barbara Botke, DVM.
Case 24-119, the complainant is Alex Pavlov and the respondent is Barbara Botke, DVM. On March 5th, 2024, the office received a complaint expressing concerns that the respondent took one of her spouse's medical marijuana edibles and was later called into work on January 23rd, 2024. Respondent did not disclose that she had taken edible earlier that evening as a sleep aid, possibly along with dihydramine, and required to go into the premises to assist. And the committee did not review this information was brought directly to you for your review and consideration.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy. So we have both the respondent and the complainant here. We've already got Dr. Botke and Mr. Carey up front. And so you guys will just both introduce yourselves for the record, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you, Chair. This is Flynn Carey, counsel for Dr. Botke. She's present to my right.
My name is Dr. Barbara Botke.
Thank you. Go ahead.
We are still kind of where we were before this case. There was a little bit of a timing issue where the case came in before there was enough development by staff. And so we did provide a response. We did try to get that response in before the last board meeting. We stand on the response. We would note, and I'll let the doctor tell you more about that, but subsequent to this, the complainant has brought animals to the respondent for care, which we would say is pretty inconsistent with her having a concern. We would also note that to our knowledge, we have not seen any evidence that there was actually any evidence of impairment. on the evening, especially given the fact that this is a practice that has more video cameras than I've ever seen in a practice before.
Yes, indeed.
So I don't know that there's any real evidence of that. I think the real error here, I think she has acknowledged that that was erroneous to do that. I also think that she was perhaps a little casual in her engagement with her employees, but that disclosure occurred at a future date, and I think, unfortunately, the plaintiff has seized upon that and used it as an opportunity to create some strife here. But I don't think that this necessarily rises to the level of a violation that would require discipline. I certainly don't believe there's any indication of a long-term or a sustained substance issue. So I view this a little differently than I would view sort of our cases where we have what I would consider being an impaired practitioner. So those are all the comments that I have, as usual. I'm going to have the licensee make a few statements, but then either of us are available for questions. I don't know if there's much for me to say today. I think this is really more to give you an opportunity to ask your questions of the licensee.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
First off, thank you for seeing me today to go over this case. I going through kind of that past and kind of what I was going through at the time, there was a lot of high stress and having that trouble sleeping. That's why I was utilizing that sleep dummy to go to sleep. I was not scheduled to work that day. And when I was called, it was hours later. I received a text message from the veterinarian who was on staff that day. And so she was requesting help more for technician purposes. We did not have the staff to help treat the patients that were coming into our ER that night. So I did try to find a couple technicians to try to see if they could come in. And at that time I felt like, okay, I can be a technician. I feel fine, I'm awake. So I went in, and it wasn't until hours into working those, that overnight that I realized that I'd taken anything. I did not feel impaired at all. I still was able to, help with the team, try to get people out who had been there for a couple hours after their 12-hour shift. That was one of my primary concerns, where the team members had been working for 12 plus hours. And once everything had settled down, I had left. I know at this time, once I had realized I had done that, I likely should have called somebody else to come in and should have left at that point. But at the moment, my team really, really needed me to be there and help. It's not something that I've ever done before. It's not something I have done since. And it's not anything I'd ever do again.
Thank you. Anything further?
After I received that complaint, The day after I received that complaint, it was a Saturday, and I had went into work. I was talking with my partners, and they agreed to let me continue to work. They had no concerns with me continuing to practice as a veterinarian at that time, and I did see the complainant's dog at that time for a complex issue where we did an exam. We sedated the pet, we took x-rays. I did correspond and collaborate with a specialist, as this was a patient with a complex case, and she gave us recommendations, and I prescribed medications for the complainant's pet at that time. At the end of March, I worked again and went in to my shift, and the complainant had brought in one of her very good friends to have just a physical exam done, and then afterwards we were able to give her pet a vaccine, and we talked about the wellness physical exam results with the owner, as well as recommendations for a dental at that time.
Okay. Thank you. I think we can step back unless anybody has a very brief question.
I just want to clarify something in the statement. You said you weren't, when you got the call, you felt awake and you weren't feeling the effects of the gummy. And then I think I heard, and I just want to clarify, that a couple hours in, you did start feeling like a...
I had realized that I had taken it. Like, it was just like a realization, I'm like, I was at work, and I'm like, wow, I'd taken something I shouldn't have before going to work. I didn't feel impaired. It was just, I had realized I had done that.
So you didn't, the first few hours you were there, you didn't realize that you had taken it?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Just one quick other question. In trying to hear that, and could you clarify the sleeping aid that was also taken at the same time?
Yeah, so I'd taken a sleepy gummy, and at the time I was also taking a medication called Unisom, which is just dihydramine.
OTC,
yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That's it.
I just had a question.
Sorry, Jane. Jane's over here.
Sorry.
Yeah. When you say a sleep gummy, there are a number of different types of gummies on the market,
yeah,
or that can be bought at special clinics that can assist sleep. What exactly was in this gummy? Was it melatonin? Was it marijuana? What was in the gummy?
It was 2.5 milligrams of THC.
So my question was just surrounding the source of it. Was this a medical marijuana or was this recreational marijuana?
It is recreational.
Okay. The report says it was medical.
It was recreational.
Recreational.
Yes.
Okay.
And just for the sake of it's legal. Marijuana is legal in Arizona at this point. So the differentiation between medical and recreational, pretty limited at this point. It's a way of access.
But it's access of medication, access of drugs, or access of over-the-counter stuff.
Just
prescription medication that can be over-the-counter too.
Yeah, not for the purpose of debating whether it was consumed, just that right. There wasn't an illegality in the possession,
yes,
of it because of the...
Yeah. Well, there would be if it was medical.
Yeah, that's,
yes,
correct.
Okay. Go ahead and step back. We do have the complainant here as well. Alex, if you would like to come forward. Morning. If you would state your name for the record, and then I'm happy to give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Yeah, my name is Alexandria Pavlov, and I think the main I'm disappointed in the accountability of what had happened. And the main thing is I don't have an issue with Dr. Backe as far as the doctor goes. This was my duty to report this because an employee came to me with concern over the impairment and then the threatening of the employee. And after that had happened, a series of events have happened, and it was part of my duty to report that I felt. So again, this isn't a personal thing. I value her opinion as a doctor. She was on staff with me as she worked, so I don't see the relevance of the animals coming to her care as a note to be noted. But yeah, I think just overall, I am disappointed with how this all kind of played out. And a complaint was made to me, and so I filed my complaint to the board because of potential impairment, and I provided all the documentation that I have. And if there's any questions, I'm more than happy to address that. But that's it.
Can you just remind me what your position is? Yeah.
Yeah, so I work in leadership, work on the team of leadership. I also manage over the CCRs. I'm primarily at Urgent Pep Prescott, as well as Yalcify Emergency, and then I handle all inventory for both sites.
Okay, got it. Okay, again, any brief questions for the complainant? Otherwise, okay. You may go ahead and step back. And Dr. James, you are the lead on this.
Do you want to back up?
I don't think so.
They can respond to anything that she's just said.
But this is an IR.
Oh, that's right. This is additional.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if we have any other questions,
yeah,
but
so.
I think,
yeah,
let's just see how this part plays out. So, okay.
So
before I make a motion, I do have a legal question, and I don't know if it's something I need to go into executive session for, because it's just in the interpretation of legal drugs and defining impairment. Because, like, when I look at, like, I could take diphenhydramine over the counter and still go to work, no one would question it, which could be considered a sleep aid, which could make me tired, which could make me not as functional, right? Like, but I can still do that and no one would be here. But because this was, I think, marijuana, which is a little bit new to all of us, definitely new to me, I don't know how you judge impairment. And I don't know, like, if somebody had taken that and then got pulled over driving, would they have been impaired? I don't know. I don't know how to know that. And that's kind of the crux of what I think we're dealing with is, could there have been impairment? Yes. We don't see evidence of impairment on anything that was provided to us. So I don't know what we're supposed to be judging exactly.
However, we do know that she was under the influence of THC.
She took the THC. It doesn't mean, like, just as Dr. Jensen
It had affected her. It was in her system. I'm not saying she was impaired. I'm saying she was under the influence.
As an aside, no, that's why back in the day you had DWIs, like driving while intoxicated,
right.
It's a DUI because it's under the influence, and that can be the influence of almost anything.
Right.
So that's why it's been expanded
yes.
out that way.
Now,
what you're saying, I shouldn't be stepping on your toes, I guess.
No.
What you're saying, I agree with it, and I think even on the police side, for someone that's pulled over, there's no immediate bedside test like that can be done with blood alcohol content or breathalyzer. So it is based on the influence and the impairment. I agree. I don't think there was actually any impairment here, but at least nothing visible. And you can't go back and say, well, you should have been impaired, so you're going to be impaired, so we're going to find a violation. I don't think we can do that. Plus, it is a legal drug. Yes, federal level, it's different. It's still a Schedule I, but on the state level, it's okay. There's still questions about DEA licenses and all that, but I think that's not part of our purview, so I don't think we need to worry about that. My only concern on this was it medical or not? Because, again, that's diversion of medicines. It's like taking someone else's Xanax and that's not okay, even if you have a justification. It's like that's a prescription. It goes
but is it when you could go in and buy the exact same thing to a dispensary? So the
it's
difference,
not the exact
I think,
same
is
thing
like.
Between the medical and the recreational?
So it could be milligrams, but again, then you can whittle it down to a teeny piece. And then I thought it was more the tax piece of it.
That's
part of
it.
The taxes. So, I mean.
It can be a little bit stronger.
Is that the same thing as somebody taking somebody else's Xanax? Like, I'm not sure if I'm quite seeing.
Because it's a medication and it's prescribed, yes.
Yeah, but again, I could go in and get the exact.
But we did find out in this case it was recreational.
Right.
So
if it's recreational, that was
a
moot
point.
That was my only concern here. Beyond there, we're setting up a weird type of precedent for something you can't judge.
We don't
have the ability to judge it at this point.
I think that's really helpful. So my other comment on this case is I think there's a lot that stems from, one, was there any impairment? And then two, the associate interaction and that piece of it, which isn't really part of what we do here at the board. Like, you can be a leader in a practice and make really bad judgment in how you talk to your associates, but I don't necessarily know that that has anything to do with our Practice Act. So I don't even know that I want to get into the fact that she was oversharing with her staff and probably doing things that HR would have a problem with. Not necessarily me. I don't, certainly not my area. So I guess in the case of 24119, I would make a motion that we dismiss this case and issue a letter of concern for practicing after taking medications and not understanding how to judge potential impairment. Like, as far as, like, she says she didn't even realize that she had taken it, but I think you need to be able to judge your own impairment to know whether you're safe to practice, and that would be my concern. But I don't see anything that led me to believe she was impaired. I don't have anything on that. And the associate issues aside, I think it was bad judgment, but I don't see that that's a violation.
Can I just add in there, like, did you guys watch the new videos?
Yeah.
Because I may be mistaken, but I thought in the video there was comment that her husband had prescription marijuana.
That's what I thought I had heard. But.
And that's what I had heard in the video, which is contradictory to what we're hearing now. So.
Well, I had heard that too, but when she was directly asked, she said it wasn't that. I don't know how to prove that.
Right.
I mean, I definitely feel like it's a little bit inconsistent.
It raises an eyebrow, but I'm like, you know what? I'll get the benefit of the doubt that it was just communication. But I think this is one of those lessons that a lot of vets, a lot of people in the business world in general, but vets, we are not business savvy, have a hard time learning is employees are not your friends. Don't chat with them. And unless you're willing to read something in the newspaper the next day, you probably shouldn't be leaving your lips.
I think since this is an issue that may come up again in the future, I would really like to get a clarification from Mark, and if we need to go in an executive session, I will so move, between inebriety, under the influence, and impaired, because I don't see impaired in the statute. I see inebriety, which to me means under the influence. It doesn't necessarily mean impaired.
And I think it's chronic inebriety, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, I think what you have to do is just judge the facts of each individual case. And what you have here are facts that seem to suggest that there's a lack of information to support perhaps a violation of your statutes. It may be completely different the next case,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
With similar facts. But you just have to judge each case as you know, as its own. And if you think that there's more information out there that you don't have in order to make a dispositive decision, that's different than making a decision based upon a complete investigation, which I think you may have before you.
I don't know. I don't know if THC gummies come in different strengths, what this strength was, whether it was, you know, if there's a heavy duty or a lightweight. I have no idea. I'm a child of the 60s, so.
But, you know, and if you think you need that information collectively as a board before you can make a decision, you can certainly continue.
Okay.
You know, if you feel you can make a decision based upon the information that you have collectively as a board, then that's what you can do this morning.
I mean, I feel like we can only go off of whether we feel like there was evidence of being impaired. Because, like, when I look at under the influence, technically, if you had a beer, you'd be under the influence. But I bet Dr. Wright would not test over the legal limit if he had a beer.
I can't stand beer, technically.
Oh, well, then don't do it. Well, that's your gut. But what I'm saying is, like, there is some level of being under the influence that does not put you beyond the legal limit. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Jane in that marijuana is certainly not in my wheelhouse of things to judge, nor do I think most people know, because I think there's a lot of documentation out there about how are we going to judge this with it being legal.
Yes.
But I just don't feel like the only thing I can go off of is on the day that she went in, did we see evidence of her being under the influence? And yes, it was a bad idea, and yes, I don't think she should have done it, and yes, that's what my letter of concern is about, but at the same time, I don't see that I can say that. I don't.
See, my concern is I'm not sure we can assess impairment. What we can determine is whether someone is under the influence because they took something or drank something or ate something. But as far as their level of impairment, I don't know that I could determine that because we haven't been trained.
But if we had something in the actual moment, oh, there was a case that went wrong, or the technician had videos of the eyes and they're all bloodshot, or I mean something, we're stumbling and running into walls in that moment, then we could probably say something. Now it's like, haha, this is what happened the other day. It's like, oh, kind of, we should not do this.
Right.
I have a hard time even with the letter of concern because, again, this is, for better or worse, a legal substance in the state of Arizona, even if it's not on federal. And would that be the equivalent of like an over-the-counter cough medication? And if you take something with dextromethorphan and methorphan and you're a little bit sleepy now, is that potentially going to be a violation?
Or my coffee.
Or coffee with like, ramped up on caffeine. So I do agree. I think a bad judgment call, but I think just the discussion is probably better than a letter of concern. Because it is a legal substance.
I can go either way on it. What I would say is anything we take, this is the concern, right? Mm-hmm. Anything we take, we need to be aware of how it affects our body. And even if it's over the counter or not, I mean, I take drugs to fly. I fly all the time. I know how I react to those drugs, and I know I can safely do certain things. But I think you have to know that. And the fact that you took something and then it didn't even dawn on you that you'd taken it until hours later, like, I think that's just, I'm just concerned that you need to pay more attention to how this is impacting you and whether you really truly are safe to practice. Because if you do something and it goes south, you're going to be held accountable, right? And so, like, I think that was my concern, is just pay attention to that. And even, it, I don't want to make my comments go longer, but even if this was like a case of I haven't been getting sleep, right? Mm-hmm. We heard that sleep was an issue. If you're going without sleep for 3 or 4 days at a time, you're impaired. You need to be able to judge, am I safe to practice every day that you walk into that practice? That's my concern. Whether it's related to the gummies or the lack of sleep or the stress that you're under or whatever, you are the judge of that.
So let's vote on the letter.
That being said, real quick, just in regards to that being said, the argument could be made that she did make that judgment, which is why she went in and nothing happened.
She made that judgment, though, unwillingly, right? Like, she didn't even know.
Yeah, she got called. I said, the vets need to learn to say no.
Yeah. Okay. How do you do that when it's your practice?
I don't know.
But, okay. But, so we have a motion to dismiss and issue a letter of concern in this case. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. We have one nay. Motion passes. Thank you all for being here today. Okay. Are we good to carry on, folks? Or does anyone need a
good discussion?
Yes.
It's kind of, I wonder how many people claim they're not impaired when they're stopped by law enforcement.
It's always 2 years.
Yeah.
Because you remember the first one.
But and they're self-assessing that they're not impaired.
Okay, so we are just going to... We'll just go back up to the top. I was looking at any other ones we could do, but we'll do a couple more. Okay, so let's go ahead and do our four pack there, number 2, 3, 4, and 5, 2463 in regards to Amy Gassman, DVM, 2464, in regards to Agena Hamza, DVM, 2465, in regards to Ryan Lunt, DVM, and 2466 in regards to Heather Sanchez Sculte, DVM.
He's on the same camera.
Yep.
So for cases 24, 63, 64, 65, and 66, the complainant is Jeremy Iverson and Oliva Messias. And October 30th, 2023, Sammy, an 11-month-old male domestic short-haired cat, was presented to Dr. Gassman due to straining to urinate, vomiting, not eating, or drinking. It was determined that the cat had a urinary blockage. Diagnostics, treatments, and hospitalizations were approved. The cat remained hospitalized for care and treatment of a urinary obstruction and azotemia secondary to the obstruction. On November 1st, 2023, Dr. Gina removed the urinary catheter. The cat was urinating on its own and eating and drinking. Renal values had also improved, therefore the cat was discharged later that day. Dr. Regina wanted to keep the cat longer, however, that would have gone over the estimate complainants had approved. On November 2nd, 2023, the cat was presented to Dr. Lunt for a recheck as the cat's condition worsened during the night. An AFAS review of a uroabdomen, Dr. Lunt recommended exploratory surgery, which was approved. Later that evening, complainants were advised that there was some necrosis present near the neck of the bladder and a urethral tear was suspected. The urinary catheter was placed and the cat was hospitalized for further care and treatment. On November 3rd, 2023, Dr. Sanchez Scoltetti took over the care and treatment of the cat. On November 4th, 2023, a contrast study was performed and revealed urine was leaking from the neck of the bladder, likely due to necrosis. The necrosis could not be repaired surgically, therefore the complainant elected to humanely euthanize the cat. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss these issues with no violation. And the motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant present, and I've got attorneys, it looks like, monitoring for all of the above.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Okay. Great, and then Dr. James, you are the lead.
And we don't have any above here? Any of the doctors?
No.
Monitoring.
Well, so my initial thought on this case was to move to an informal, so I'm just going to put that out there. But as I was reviewing it, there was concern. My concern on and why I was going to do that is about the free fluid that was noted to be in the abdomen after the initial placement of the catheter and how well that was followed up, because it sounded like it was supposed to be followed up on to see if it was getting worse, and then it was kind of inconsistently monitored. And so that was really the crux of why I was moving it to an informal. But if others did not have a concern with that, I could certainly be swayed to move forward with the investigative committee findings.
I had the exact same concern.
Okay. I had it down as an informal.
Okay. So then in the cases, can I do it all together? 2463, 2464, 2465, and 2466. I would make a motion that we move them to informals.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to move all four cases to an informal. Is there any further discussion? Okay, all this.
I'm sorry, due to the free fluid, how it was addressed or what?
I had questions about, there was initially noted on ultrasound to be some free fluid in the abdomen, and that they were going to monitor that. That's what was told to the complainant. And my concern is, how well was that monitored and by whom? And should we have detected something earlier?
Okay, so all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. We are all gonna go to informal. Let's go ahead and move to section number four, item number 12380, in regards to Don Hunsberger, BMD, monthly appearance as required by interim consent agreement. Board may review, discuss, and take action on information provided, including review of compliance with interim consent agreement and current license suspension status.
I'm recused on this.
Yep, and please note for the record, Dr. Nosley is recused. Thank you both for being here today. I see you have your friend with you, and all that I would ask, if anybody has specific questions for her, please feel free to ask those of her, but otherwise we just ask that she kind of hang out beside you, if that's okay. But, and then let's see, Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yes. Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Good.
So with our last consent agreement, we had a couple of items for you to kind of go back and take care of, one of which was letting your direct supervisor see the consent agreement and get back with us, which that was taken care of. Are you currently working under direct supervision?
Yes.
And it looks as though they have a breathalyzer for you at work as well?
I have it, but okay. I'll take it back and forth.
Okay, and then they have you... What is the process?
The manager I meet when I get there, or the owner. And if either one of them are not there, it's two senior staff members.
Okay.
And they also test after lunch break.
Okay. Excellent. So they're doing it twice during the day. Okay. So there is a little bit of concern. So we did increase the testing to back to twice a month, and I know we're going to be doing the blood tests. But those tests are supposed to be random, and it sounds as though there's some difficulty in with the current lab that you are using, so LabCorp?
LabCorp and Sonora Quest don't have a random generator. For right now, I still am registered with AbraHealth for that. I don't know at what point they may say I can't, since I'm not going through their urine testing program. But I'm counting on that right now. I have thoughts. I don't know if there's online random generators. I kind of started looking to see if there's anything that I can find that will do random.
Is there any way you can reach out to your evaluator and see if they have any suggestions or?
I have an appointment with Dr. Flatley after I'm done here today.
Okay, maybe check with him or her and see.
So it looks like the last test that you had was negative. That test was on March 27th. And we do not have in our records that you had any additional testing since then, correct?
I haven't been called this month. They told me it might take a month. I was gonna ask, I can go any day, it doesn't matter, but they may not get to it twice this month based on it being so late in March when we signed the consent agreement and I got over to talk to them.
And who is them?
Aberhealth.
Yeah, so we need to
figure out. It should definitely be instituted by May, for sure.
Okay, so we're 21 days from our last test. Mm-hmm. So, and random testing could mean that there are 2 days in a row, right?
Yes.
Like that is random. So I think it's really important for you to work with Aberhealth or the doctor that you're going to have an appointment with and make sure that you get those 2 tests done. We need to make sure that we've already had to modify the consent agreement once. We need to make sure that we're staying
that
within those parameters.
That is one of the questions that I have. If I'm getting tested 4 days a week to 5 days a week, twice a day, do I still have to get the blood testing done? Because you're testing me more than twice a month.
Yes. So the blood test was part of the consent agreement, and then that the breathalyzer became part of the consent agreement. That was something that you actually offered up. As just because, if you remember, you were actually in violation. So these were all concessions that were put in there to help you continue to practice. So yes, I know it seems like it's a heavy burden, but we had a little back, we had a back slip, and so there's a lot that we need to do to go forward to make sure that we're being consistent, right? So I understand where you're coming from, but you have to kind of understand where we're coming from on that too.
And remember, we've talked before, things can get set down, you know, when we have everything's moving, you know, moving along well. So, you know, it's not necessarily going to be this way for the next, you know, 4 years. So,
you were making good strides before. Let's work on that going forward. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but I would recommend that we get those two tests done. I know that the month is already halfway over, but you know that again that can be random. So. It doesn't mean that it's within the first 15 days and then the last 15 days. It can be whenever they want to. So get with Aberhealth and get with your doctor to see how you can get those 2 tests done. I don't have, it looks like you were doing, you checked the list on the other things that were asked in the consent agreement. So thank you for doing that. And how are you doing overall?
I'm doing fine.
Yeah, good.
Glad to be back.
Good, excellent.
The only other question I have for convenience, since all my reports are due before the board meeting, is there any chance the work can send the breathalyzer reports once a month the week before the meeting, like I send my AA reports instead of twice a month?
What does the consent agreement say?
It says twice a month.
We'll just keep everything the same, and then again, just like Prager said, if we have progress moving forward, then we can look at stepping back, just like we did with the initial consent agreement, right? We had back those down, but then we had to go and pick those back up again. So over time, if things are looking good, then we can reassess.
I know when I was on twice a month, sometimes it would be the first week, I'd have 2 of them done. Sometimes it would be the beginning and the end.
Yep.
So I don't, maybe they did get it instituted and it just hasn't come up at all this month yet. I don't know.
Yeah. No, and I understand that. I guess it was just kind of a warning to me because the one that we do have on file was before the consent agreement was even sent. So we haven't technically had one since the signing of the new consent agreement. So I just wanted to make sure it didn't get lost in the process of where you are going for the blood, understanding we don't have the randomizer, and then how can we get this on course?
If I do find an app or something like that, is that acceptable for you guys?
Well, they would have to instill it. It's not something that you can have on your phone and say, hey, this is a random day, I'm gonna go get tested, right? So it's something that they would have to call you in, not you saying, hey, can I come in?
They meaning?
The lab.
And if they won't do that,
then that's where we were recommending, you know, speaking with your provider, just ask what, you know, where they might know of a place that can do that.
Okay. I can ask.
It's gotta be out there somewhere.
I know, right?
That I know.
Seems so, I mean, yeah. I believe you, but it just, you would think that's a big piece of a lot of these
well,
testing.
Well, I also don't live in Phoenix.
Right,
so
you're not
a lot of veterinarians.
You're not in completely, you know,
not
the boonies, but yeah.
I mean, they don't have a urine testing place within 10 minutes of my house. I have to drive a half an hour either direction,
right.
Even for that.
Yeah.
So, even for the blood test, so I will look into it.
Yeah, and I, you know, I just want to comment in that I personally applaud you for what you're going through. I think it's a lot of hard work from people that I know that have gone through this. And I don't want you to think we're trying to be difficult or judgmental or anything like that. It's really, we don't know either. So some of these things, we just have to kind of let you figure out this is what we've asked of you, and however we can figure that out to make it work. But it has to be that it's random from somebody else, because otherwise
right.
You could say, it's today, great, I'm going in.
Well, that's
you know
what I was asking, if like my boss puts it on her phone. It's not from me. I don't know what day it's coming.
Yeah, probably a medical provider, and that's why I think the recommendation was to go back to your doctor. But and my comment is really just around, we do understand this is hard. This is not an easy feat for anyone to go through, and so we're not trying to be difficult as much as it seems like we probably are, because we want you to get healthy. We want you to stay on track and stay in practice
for sure. So.
And it sucks that labs aren't everywhere, and it sucks that, you know, sometimes that's the downside of living in a rural area, but the upside is you don't deal with the traffic of Phoenix, right? Like, I mean, I would love to not live in Phoenix every day, so I understand. I it is a little more challenging.
So the random would have to come from
the lab,
a medical professional, if the lab wouldn't do it.
I would say the lab, but then I would say just ask your medical professional
right.
what they do if the labs don't do it. Like how there has to be an option that they've instilled for other people, so that we would probably entertain if the doctor had given you guidance as to this is how to do it.
Can we ask Victoria if she has any suggestions on this?
Only to ask her provider, the evaluator, because they do like that all the time.
But we need to have the consent. I just want to make sure we're clear so the doctor understands that the consent agreement requires twice a month, and that is effective for the month of April. So there are two required this month.
Okay.
I have no further questions.
I think we're
good otherwise, so thank you both for being here. Okay, we are now going to go to item number 10, 2480, in regards to Janet Forberger, EPM. Or are you recused on that one too?
I'm recused.
Oh, okay, got it.
Case 2480, the complainant is Herbert and Karen Kirsch. The respondent is Jim for DVM. On September 9th, 2021, Tashi, a 13-year-old female chihuahua, was presented to respondent for vaccines and annual blood work. Respondent recommended complainant consider a renal diet for the dog. On May 10th, 2022, the dog was presented to respondent for inappetence and weight loss. Blood work was done, and the dog was diagnosed with stage 2 kidney disease. A renal diet and a renal support supplement were ordered by complainant. On November 2nd, 2022, the dog was presented to respondent's associate for inappetence and hind leg issues. Blood work was recommended if symptoms persisted despite supportive treatments. On August 9th, 2023, the dog was presented to respondent for an annual exam. Blood work was recommended but declined by complainant. Respondent advised to let the dog eat whatever she wanted. On August 21st, 2023, the dog was presented to Southern Arizona Veterinary Specialty and Emergency Center for Dentistry due to not eating. The dog was unable to stand and was severely dehydrated. Blood work revealed severe azotemia. Later that day, the dog was humanely euthanized. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I ask a question about the summary?
Yes.
Is, in the second, third paragraph, it says, blood group was, no. Sorry, what is this? A renal diet and renal support were ordered by the complainant? Is that, were ordered by the respondent? The complainant went in and said, I need a renal diet and a renal support?
It might have been recommended and they ordered it. That's what I believe that they ordered.
The complainant ordered it?
Online, maybe? I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay.
I'll have to look.
All right.
Let me verify that for you.
I just usually, when a doctor places an order, like to do this, it's the respondent making it. That's why I was like, so the complainant went in for blood work and then ordered their own renal diet and renal support? I wasn't sure what happened there, but.
I'll verify that.
I can only speak from experience that once you have the prescription from the veterinarian, you can submit that and order it online.
You can physically order it. I'm using ordered in the words of a medical.
Right. Okay.
Who ordered.
Gotcha.
Right.
See, and I think that's what I was referring to, that was ordered by the complainant.
Okay.
Not it wasn't ordered by the.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got Mr. Stoll here. Are you monitoring?
Monitoring only.
Okay, and then we do have Herb and Karen are present.
Yes.
Come on down. Thank you both for being here. I know you traveled far. So I'd like to give you both 5 minutes each to address the board. Please keep in mind, we have all the information that's been submitted, so you don't need to repeat, you know, any of that information specifically, okay? But will you both just state your name for the record?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Karen.
Great. Okay. Thank you. You may address the board.
Okay, 5 minutes. First and foremost, the investigative committee, under the leadership of Mr. Dow, abandoned all fidelity to the contents of the complaint and quickly moved to dismiss. It was a breathtaking dog and pony show, a complete lack of regard for the appearance of fairness, and that flies in the face of what this agency is supposed to be about. The relevant facts are as follows. Whereas IRIS is the recognized leader in providing evidence-based recommendations to practicing veterinarians for diagnosing, monitoring, treating, and managing kidney disease, in each of the chronic kidney disease stages, it is abundantly clear respondent was grossly negligent for failing to recommend standard patient care intervention as recommended by IRIS for canines diagnosed with IRIS stage 2 renal disease. Whereas IRIS states their recommendations are a useful starting point at each stage and that serial monitoring is ideal, it is abundantly clear respondent was grossly negligent for failing to recommend any and all monitoring whatsoever. Further, respondent was grossly negligent multiple times, thereby shortening Tashi's life. Respondent's first act of gross negligence began 2 years prior when respondent diagnosed Tashi with the start of renal disease when senior early detection labs were drawn. As stated in the complaint, Dr. Josh Fender of Southern Arizona Veterinary Specialty and Emergency Hospital, who euthanized Tashi, strongly believes respondent deprived Tashi of standard patient care intervention beginning 2 years earlier when senior early detection labs were drawn and no monitoring whatsoever was recommended. Respondent's second act of gross negligence occurred 8 months after the senior early detection labs, when Tashi's BUN score nearly doubled at 75, and respondent diagnosed Tashi with IRIS stage 2 renal disease, and still respondent failed to provide standard patient care by failing to recommend any and all monitoring when it became even more absolutely necessary. Respondent's third act of gross negligence occurred 5 months after the IRIS stage 2 renal disease diagnosis, whereby Tashi was seen for an annual exam, and yet again, no monitoring whatsoever was recommended. Respondent's fourth act of gross negligence occurred 6 months after the IRIS stage 2 renal disease diagnosis, whereby Tashi was brought in for not feeling well. However, respondent was out of the office, and Tashi was seen by a colleague who recommended labs only if Tashi didn't start to feel better. However, respondent was made aware of this visit, and yet again, no monitoring whatsoever. Respondent's fifth act of gross negligence occurred 15 months after the IRIS stage 2 renal disease diagnosis. Respondent strongly recommended a dental cleaning, and suddenly now, 15 months after failing to recommend any and all monitoring, and 10 days before Tashi died, respondent arbitrarily recommended labs, making no reference whatsoever to the renal disease. We declined labs and scheduled with a dental specialist, knowing they would perform labs. However, upon veterinary specialists drawing labs, they reported Tashi's condition as severe stage 4 renal failure and recommended euthanasia. This board is now fully informed of respondents' multiple gross negligent failures.
Okay, thank you. Herb, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No.
And thank you for bringing a timer. I need to have one of those for myself. but we appreciate you being here. You can go ahead and step back now unless anybody had any quick questions. Okay, thank you. Okay, and Dr. James, you are the lead on this one.
Yes, sir.
The answer to that.
So,
and again, sorry, I just want to make sure the record states that Dr. Nosley is recused on this.
Yeah, so this case, I mean, this is a hard one because it goes back so many years, and so then to determine what was said and what was recommended, you're really going off of just what was in the medical records, and sometimes you don't get the commentary as to how this actually played out. I think in looking at this, and in certainly after understanding the ultimate cause of death and Tashi related to the kidneys, like, it certainly makes you go back and say, were things done appropriately? Could they have been done differently? Could more have been done? And was enough done according to our standard of care, right? This, I would preface with, the standard of care is a baseline. It doesn't mean that everything was done. It doesn't mean the gold standard was done. It doesn't get to that level. It means that the baseline requirements were completed, right? So we have to take that into account too, because I think sometimes we go back and say, well, if we had done the gold standard and we had done this, well, that's fine, but that's not what our requirements of our practice act actually are looking at. And that might be where the investigative committee was coming from. When I initially reviewed the medical records and what had been done, I didn't see any obvious violations. I certainly understand where the owners are coming from on could more have been done. I think that's something that we would all ask ourselves, but I didn't see a specific violation in how this case was handled.
And you know, I have to add, so my cattle dog is in kidney failure, kind of stage 1, stage 2 since last summer. And you know, I guess I read this and I was like, I thought my options are fairly limited as far as, you know, she's on the CD diet, she does the blood work and checks the urine, but beyond that, I mean, the reality is the reality, and doesn't mean, you know, she could potentially have years, but that's my understanding though of what, when we say kidney failure, you can't actually do anything that's,
well,
are you buying time? I mean, she's
You can do,
she's
like,
on a medication as well, but you know,
a little bit of fluids, and that just helps diurese. I mean, if we're having a low red blood cell count because of hormone problems, we can start some medication for that. But there's nothing we can do to actually get function of the kidneys back. We can have the kidneys, the kidney functionality that's remaining, work a little bit easier with the foods and those kinds of things. But there's nothing medication that's ever going to bring a kidney back, and we can't do transplants in animals. They die very quickly from that. There's the new medications on the human side. I think Farxiga is one of the new ones. That maybe that'll show promise someday in veterinary medicine. Pets. But kidneys are hard because once you lose kidney function, without, I mean, that's why people are on dialysis and people get the transplants. There's no way to fix that. You can try and slow it down. That's all you can do.
I think another point to mention is that on the very first blood work, you know, it's very easy to look back and say, yes, maybe we should have done sequential blood work after that. But if we look at it, the BUN was very mildly elevated, and the creatinine, which is the other thing that we look at together, was within the normal range. And so, you know, there are other things that can cause those slight increases of the BUN, not just kidney failure. So I think it's, again, it's very easy in hindsight to look at things and identify them, but, you know, there's other things that could have, or, you know, subtle things, even a higher protein in your diet can cause that. So that can be very difficult.
Jane? Yes, just a quick question of the DVMs. My experience with kidney disease is feline. And I know that my 20-year-old cat has been, I've been administering subcutaneous fluids for over 4 years. The volume and frequency has changed with time on consultation with the veterinarian, but that clearly, he's now 20. He doesn't have a lot left, but he's still here. Is that the same for canines? Can they do sub-Q fluids for kidney failure?
Yeah, it's basically the only option we have for dialysis. I mean, it's diuresis, it's giving a whole bunch of fluids and hoping you pee out as much
flush
stuff
it
as
out.
Possible,
yeah.
Since we can't do actual dialysis. But I mean, yeah, it definitely can help to get stuff out. Is it a magical end-all be-all? Hard to say. I've had many cases where they're in kidney failure. I put them on IV fluids, which you can't get better than IV fluids, for 3 to 5 days, and the values don't change.
Right.
So sometimes you can help manage it, sometimes you can't, and you never know without trying, but...
In my experience, I feel like the cats, once diagnosed, can live longer than the dogs do. So the cats, for whatever reason, just handle it a little bit better. The dogs, generally, not as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry, I can't have you speak at this point, though. Sorry.
Before we move on to a recommendation, or before I make a motion, do any of the veterinarians see anything in there that was concerning to them outside of what I've already mentioned?
I mean, nothing, I mean, stuff was talked about in general, but nothing that seemed problematic.
I mean, I certainly understand this owner's desire to want to go back and look at everything and really kind of question, could we have done something different? I applaud them for that, because that's how we all want to do it too, and that's how we learn and get better. But I just from reviewing everything, I do not see a violation of our practice act. So I would make a motion in 2480 that we support the investigative committee findings of no violations.
No monitoring, no medication.
Okay, ma'am, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I've been here for years.
Okay, ma'am, I'm sorry. And I am gonna second that motion, and you know, again, add that for what it's worth, I think that these pet parents obviously cared about Tashi, and we're very sorry for the loss of your pet, but I think that you guys took great care of her. So I hope, you know, if that brings you any peace, but so if there's no further discussion,
just one quick correction.
Sure.
The Mr. Dow you're referring to in an investigative committee is a DVM, so it's a Dr. Dow, I do believe.
Okay, sure. Thank you for that. Okay, if there's no further questions or comments, all those in favor of dismissing case 2480 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you for being here. Okay, how about we take a quick couple minute break?
Sounds good.
Or more if you need it.
Thank you.